MacCast, Sunday, July 10th, 2011. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, you know it is summer when things heat up. What? Well, one, yeah, that's a good sign. It gets a lot hotter. And also, when your schedule goes all chaotic and crazy, and you've got relatives in town, and you've got people visiting, and you're just juggling just about everything. And luckily for me, things have started to calm back down. Oh, the other sign is that all of the Apple news just seems to kind of dry up and wither, and all we have left are a bunch of rumors and speculation until the new operating system comes out. And typically in the past, we've had new iPhone hardware, but that's been put on hold and delayed this time around. So not a whole lot in the news this week, but I think I have something great for you in this episode to make up for it. I did a bunch of interviews at Nerdtacular conference put on by Scott Johnson, who runs Frog Pants Studios, longtime podcaster, has done a bunch of great shows. You might know him from a show called Extra Life Radio, which was based on a webcomic that he does, which is also really great. You should check out all his stuff. I'll have links in the show notes at MacCast.com. But I went up to that conference in Utah, and MacCast members have got to hear a series of interviews I did with Veronica Belmont, Tom Merritt, and Mike Schramm from TUAW. They got exclusive early access to that. I'm going to share that stuff with you. So one, you can get a little sample of what you might hear if you become a MacCast member, but also they were just some great interviews all about the announcements Apple made at WWDC. So a lot of stuff about Lion, iCloud, and that's a great precursor, I think, to what's going to happen hopefully this week. Rumors are pointing that we should see Lion drop this week. More on that in a second. And so I think that's a good lead-in and a bunch of great content to share with you in kind of this news lull that we're in. So stay tuned for that. Before we get started, I do want to take a quick moment and recognize one of my show sponsors, Phoronix. You know, they make a product called, they make a bunch of great products, but the product I want to talk to you about is Deep Freeze. Mentioned it on the show before, but what this is really great for is keeping your operating system safe and keeping your users happy, especially if you're in a shared environment. School situations are great for this. Government institutions use their software. Basically, any place where you have shared computing environments, a computer lab, something like that. And the reason it's so great is because what you do is you go in, you set up the system, you get everything installed, your applications, the operating system, everything in place, and then you can go in and you can lock that system down and then allow users to use that system. And if they install something that you didn't want on there, if they access an area, if they delete something in the system folder, critical system files, anything like that, anything that would normally require an IT person to come in and fix, all you have to do is reboot that system. Deep Freeze will kick in and restore that back to that original state that you deployed that system in. It keeps users happy, though, because they might have documents and data that need to persist between different sessions. Well, you can define something called a thaw space, and those are areas that are allowed, users are allowed to put documents in, and those don't get wiped away or restored when the system's rebooted. So it's really great for that. I mentioned schools love it. It's great for hospitality situations, so hotels use it, but also great if you run a small business and you want to have a shared computer, say, in your waiting room. I know a lot of doctors and dentists and things like that who listen to the show. Perfect application for that. You don't have to worry about people messing up your Mac. You just go in there and reboot it. It's also great between sessions for protecting your customers' data. So if they go on, they do some web surfing, maybe they log into their banking website, cookies get installed, things like that. Well, you reboot that system, all that stuff is cleaned, wiped away, it's back and refreshed for the next user to come along. They have free trials available. If you want to check it out before you buy, you can get more information and details over at Phoronix.com. And a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. So as I kind of alluded to at the top, the intro there, Lion should be out this week. It should be very soon. They released the Gold Master build. It was seeded last week to developers. That's usually the last step before Apple puts it out there. It's going to be distributed through the Mac App Store. We know that you're going to have OS X Snow Leopard installed. So if you're getting ready for the pending update, make sure you've got that on the systems that you're going to want to upgrade. Many of the sites are putting the date as July 14th, and that's because there's been some rumors, some indication that Apple's going to do in their retail stores what's called an overnight. That's where they ask the employees to stay late and kind of change over the branding and the signage and all the promotions in the store, and that's reportedly happening on the 13th. So Thursday is likely to be the date when you will be able to get our hands on Lion. There also might be some new hardware coming out after that. We've been getting a lot of rumors about updated hardware, mostly centered around upgrades to existing systems. Not a lot of design changes, but bumping everything up to the new Intel architectures, the Sandy Bridge, and adding Thunderbolt ports. MacBook Air seems to be at the top of most of the rumor lists as the system to get the first upgrade, but we've also heard little inklings about maybe a Mac Mini update. The Mac Pros are really overdue for an update, and even MacBooks have been thrown out there. So something's going to be happening towards the end of this week. We'll be covering that. Of course, the launch of Lion, and I'll give you all my experiences and stuff like that, but stay tuned. Apple also, interestingly enough, it came out last week, made some changes to the end user license agreement with that Gold Master build release of Lion that looks like they're going to finally allow you to run virtualized machines of Mac OS X using the desktop operating system. In Snow Leopard, you were allowed to run virtualized environments of OS X if you had Mac OS X server, but that's like a $500 product. It's going to be $50 to do the upgrade for Lion, but you are going to be able to supposedly run virtualized copies of OS X. I don't know if that is only going to be locked to Lion or if that'll extend down to running Snow Leopard. If you could potentially run Snow Leopard, that could solve the problem we've been talking about of those people who still have one or two applications they might need to run under Rosetta, which is also going away under Lion. But Lion due out this week, so stay tuned for more news on that later in the week, or hopefully later in the week if the rumors turn out to be true. iPad 2 rumors still floating around out there, although they changed a little bit, or there was a new theory put forth this week by an analyst, FBR Capital Markets analyst Craig Berger. He coined what he's calling the iPad 2 Plus, and I guess that's just his fancy name for the rumors we've already been hearing about iPad 3 potentially coming out in the fall, in that September timeframe, with the iPhone iOS 5. And the idea is all these rumors center around it having a higher resolution display, so moving into that Retina range, although there's some ongoing debate now about what Retina means. When Apple added the Retina display to the iPhone 4, it was a 300 pixel per inch or higher resolution, or that's what everybody's been interpreting at. The iPad's looking to get a double the resolution, so basically four times the number of pixels, which will put the pixel density, I think, up in the 250, 260 range, I believe, but under that 300 point. But I think a lot of people are resolving themselves to the fact that that would be a high enough resolution to qualify for Retina. And I think the definition really of Retina was that you couldn't distinguish the individual pixels on the display with the naked eye. So I haven't seen that kind of resolution display yet, so I couldn't really tell you if that would hold true, but the rumors are pointing in that direction. As far as will this happen in the fall, will we see an iPad 3, an iPad 2 Plus, whatever you want to call it, I'm still in the camp that says it's not going to happen. I don't think Apple has any reason to be updating the iPad mid-year. I think they're going to stay on that yearly cycle, so I think we'll see it in early 2012, not any iPad update in 2011, but I could be proven wrong. Certainly, I think what's going to happen in September is we are going to see a new iPhone. We're going to see the iPhone 5 come out. We saw some new rumors surface this week, although a lot of reiteration of the same stuff we've been hearing before. The source is a little bit different this time. The Wall Street Journal weighed in. They said they had some indications that there's going to be a new design. It's going to be thinner. It's going to be lighter. We've heard all this stuff before. That it will have an 8-megapixel camera. That's been being thrown back and forth whether or not Apple update the camera sensor, the rear-facing camera sensor, to 5 megapixel or 8 megapixel. Wall Street Journal's going with the latter, the higher resolution, and they're also reiterating the fact that it'll have that Qualcomm world-capable wireless chipset, so be able to do CDMA, GSM, and one chip for all the different basebands, all the different frequencies, and the Apple will be able to sell one phone that they can lock or unlock. There's still not a lot of information on what will happen with the SIM slot, but my guess is that it'll just be blocked off on the CDMA models. Or maybe not. Maybe they'll just have a door there and you just won't stick a SIM card in. I'm not really sure. I've never really thought or had an opportunity to look at other phones that have these world chipsets that work on both GSM and CDMA networks. Do they have a SIM slot and it's just not used or what have you? If you happen to know, if you have one of those phones, send me an email. Let me know. As far as will it be a 4G phone, there have been rumors Apple needs to update, or not rumors that they need to update, but many people have mentioned that Apple should be updating to 4G. Some of their competitors have 4G models out. I think it's really too soon, and there's some information out now that actually if Apple wanted to add 4G to the iPhone 5, it would require a whole second chipset, and that chip would be larger, so it would actually be very hard for Apple to do a new thinner design if they went with a 4G model. And I think Tim Cook even mentioned in one of the quarterly conference calls that until they can actually match their design requirements with the technology, that Apple's not going to be doing a 4G phone. And I think even 2011, still too early for 4G. I know some people want it in some markets, but I think Apple's going to want to have a wider rollout of 4G, and that's going to happen sometime in 2012. So I think it makes more sense for them to go 4G in 2012 when more of their customers are going to be able to leverage and take advantage of that. The other rumor we've been hearing is that there's going to be a second model of the iPhone in September, a cheaper version. Some say Apple might continue selling the 3GS, possibly giving it away for free with the standard 2-year contract subsidy. I think that what will happen is we'll see the role of the iPhone 3GS being replaced by the iPhone 4. I think Apple's going to continue that roll down that they do. The iPhone 4 will become the new cheaper model, maybe starting out in that $100, $150 range and then quickly dropping down to, I think you can get a subsidized iPhone 3GS for about $50. And I think I might have said iPhone 3G earlier when I was talking about Apple continuing to sell the older model that should have been 3GS, but I don't even think they're going to do that. They're going to sell the iPhone 4 at the cheaper price. The one theory, and I mentioned this, kind of put it forth on the last show, I think it came based on an article written over at the unofficial Apple weblog, that Apple might replace the iPod Touch with a low-end iPhone. And I thought, I really think that what'll happen potentially is that the iPod Touch will get 3G added to it, much in the same way that we have 3G options, wireless options on the iPad 2. And that might be where some of these rumors are coming from, that there's going to be a 3G enabled iPod Touch that would be at a cheaper price point. And essentially, you'd have the ability to get all your data bits, but without the phone bits. And kind of backing this up is some of the technology I think that's in iOS 5, things like iMessage. So you can do your SMS messaging just on a 3G data network, but without the phone portion, because you can iMessage from iPhone to iPod Touch or iPod Touch to iPad, what have you. And then you have technologies like Skype, VoIP technologies that you could also run across that 3G connection. And really, you wouldn't necessarily need the phone bits. But it could go even further, and they could allow you to, if you want, enable those phone bits on, say, like an iPod Touch, and now you have a cheaper iPhone. They're going to have to do something, though, to distinguish the iPhone 5 from that lower-end model, and what that exactly would be, I'm not really sure. But I think Apple's going to kind of stick to the same plan. iPhone 4 is for a little bit cheaper, and the iPhone 5 will be the new hot thing that everybody wants to get their hands on. Last thing that I wanted to talk about real quickly in the news that kind of came up this week is iOS and iTunes getting higher-end HD. Apple, the rumors are saying, might be getting ready to start doing 1080p content, full 1080p distributed through iTunes, 10 megabits per second. So higher bandwidth, higher bit rate stuff. Reportedly, they have two or three studios on board with titles ready to go for some sort of trial, probably around the time that iOS 5 is released, because iOS 5 reportedly has references for 1080p decoding and encoding. So people have been looking at the latest, the current beta builds of iOS 5 and found those references in there. So it looks like Apple's gearing up for a little higher than the 720p that they've been currently dealing with. There's also been rumors that along with that, some new hardware would come out for the to support it on the Apple TV 2, Apple bumping the processor in that up to an A5 to be able to support the higher bandwidth needed for that. So if you're a 1080p video fan and been waiting for Apple to throw that on board, especially in iOS and iTunes content, it might be coming probably sometime in the fall. Some other real quick HD-related stories. Mini DisplayPort to HDMI cables just came out not too long ago. You started to be able to get those. I think Canex makes one of them that's distributed through Dr. Bot. Well, those might be being recalled or at least being pulled off the market, not available for sale. HDMI.org, the licensor of the HDMI standard, says the current mini DisplayPort to HDMI cables must be taken off the market because they are unlicensed. I guess the licensing for HDMI cables requires that if you have an HDMI cable with a male connector, it has to be male on both ends. Otherwise, it's not licensed properly or is in violation of the licensing. So they're requiring people to pull those down. I guess Monoprice has already pulled some of their cables. Interestingly enough, the mini display port to HDMI adapters like Apple sells are okay because they have a female HDMI connector and still require you to get a standard male-to-male HDMI cable. So it sounds like they're kind of splitting hairs on the licensing, but may very well be within their rights to have retailers pull those cables. So if you have one of those cables, hold on to it. You're lucky. I don't know how they're going to enforce an actual recall on something like that. And then finally, if you have a Mac Mini home theater system, you've been using that to hook up to your television, you may have noticed some issues after running Apple's latest update to Snow Leopard 10.6.8. I would imagine this affects anybody, but I guess Mac Mini owners are being a little more vocal about the issue. There was a report this week that they're saying optical and HDMI audio is reportedly dropping out completely, and that the only way to restore the audio is to actually do a full reboot of the system. So I would imagine that could be very annoying if you're sitting there watching your favorite film and all of a sudden there's no audio and you have to pause the movie, do a complete reboot. So hopefully that's something Apple is aware of at this point. There's been a number of discussions pointed to or referenced on the Apple discussion boards in the support system. So I'm sure Apple is aware of the issue, and hopefully they'll be issuing a fix for that real quickly. But if you've noticed that after running the 10.6.8 update that you've been having optical audio or HDMI audio issues, you're not alone, and just wanted to make you aware of that. So that's kind of it for the news for today. Before I move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank another one of my show sponsors. You know, if you're like me, you have gadgets, you have things that you buy, you have maybe a digital camera, digital video camera, something like that, your computer, your iPad, your iPods, and the stuff upgrades so quickly. You're getting new models and you kind of have that dilemma of what do you do with the old thing? And very often the old thing just ends up in a drawer collecting dust. Well, if you want a great way to get rid of that, get it out of your house and maybe get some cash back for that, or even a way to recycle it responsibly, check out Gazelle, gazelle.com. You go to their website. They enable you to avoid the hassle of trying to have to resell that thing to put it on a classified listing site or put it on an auction site, which I always worry about the security of that. So you just go to Gazelle. They have a simple search tool. You put in what you have. You answer some questions about the condition, what kinds of accessories you still have for it, and then it will present to you a price. They will say, we will give you this much cash for it, and you can take it or leave it. If you choose to accept the offer, they very often will send you a box to send that in, and they pay for the shipping. So you send it in, They take a look at it. They make sure it matches the condition and information that you provided to them. And then they pay you for that gadget. And you can get paid in a bunch of different ways. You can get a check. You can get a gift card. You can even have that donated to your favorite charity. So if you'd like to just give back, you can do that. And on items where they can't give you a value or it doesn't have a value, they'll handle the recycling. They use BAN certified Cloud Blue, which is one of the most respected names in domestic recyclers. So you know it's not going to end up over somewhere in another country leaching bad stuff into the water or something like that. So it is a really great service. It's easy. And like I said, you can just do a simple search and get that upfront offer right away. So go to gazelle.com and find out how much your gadgets are worth today. It's really that simple. And a big thank you to Gazelle for their support of the MacCast. So real quickly, before I get to the interviews, we've been talking a little bit about the new feature in Lion, Conversations, which I'm really excited about. The ability to kind of group together not only emails that you send out, but also the replies, and do that kind of in a smart, intelligent way. I'm really excited to get a look at how that technology works. And I had mentioned that on a prior show, and on the last show, I got some feedback and a great recommendation on how to use smart folders to kind of simulate that technology, basically the grouping together of stuff from your sent mailbox and your inbox and put that into a threaded conversation together. Well, I wanted to cover another tip I got this week because Andy came forward and he had another method for doing this that I think is both simple and really versatile. So he said he does a similar thing, but rather than going ahead and setting up whole separate smart folders, all he does is he selects his inbox when he's in macOS 10 mail from the list on the left, and then simply uses the tried and true trick of holding down the command key to do a multiple selection and selects his sent mailbox that corresponds to that, and then turns on the mail threading, and that'll put both your sent and your inbox messages together in a threaded conversation in a single view. And what's great about this is you don't have to just do those mailboxes. You can do any grouping of mailboxes. So if you're like me, I like to organize a lot of my mail by setting up different mailboxes in my IMAP accounts, and then I will archive messages to that, including my sent messages. So very often my sent messages aren't in the sent folder, they're in some other folder in that list. And so you can go through, you can hold down the command key, you can do multiple folders, you could do 2, 3, 4, 10, however many you need to do just on the fly, and then show that threaded conversation, and they'll all be there kind of grouped together. Again, I don't think this is quite exactly what Lion has in terms of what they're calling conversations. I haven't seen conversations yet, so I'll have to give you more hopefully later this week when Lion comes out. But I think this is a good little trick and very useful and can be done quickly and easily. So I want to thank Andy for sending that in. And if you have any tips like this, whether it be for mail or something else within macOS 10, please send those along. You know, I do some digging and try and find cool little tips and tricks, but most of the time a lot of these suggestions come from you, and there's great little gems out there. So send those along, maccast@gmail.com, and I look forward to receiving those. All right, let's get to my Nerdtacular interviews. It was a great show out there in Utah. Scott's been doing it for a couple years now, and it started out as kind of a movie event. They do a summer movie premiere and get a bunch of people together, rent out a theater. And this year was the first year where it really was a conference. They rented a hall. They had sessions. They had a great opening session, covered a lot of stuff on podcasting. There were tons of podcasters there from his network. And then they also had a whole session on gaming. And Brian Ibid did a fun trivia thing. Brian Ibid from Coverville. If you don't know that podcast, you should check it out. Great music podcast where he plays all covers. And it was just a whole lot of fun. And it's really becoming quite a great tech conference. So you should check it out next year. I'll have links to it. Nerdtacular.com is the place. But there were quite a few Mac geeks in the house there. I saw a lot of iPads floating around the floor as well. And so I grabbed Veronica Belmont, Tom Merritt, and Mike Schramm, sat each one of them down for an interview, and just wanted to ask them, because this was happening right after the WWDC event, wanted to ask them their thoughts on Mac OS X, direction Apple was moving in, and some of the things that were happening with iOS and the merging of the systems and stuff like that. So really great interviews. Like I said, these went out to MacCast members over the last couple of weeks, and I just wanted to share them with you because there's such great content in here. So if you like what you hear, this is a good sampling of what you might hear if you become a MacCast member, and you can find more information on how to do that over at member.maccast.com. But we're going to start off talking to Veronica, then we'll talk with Mike Schramm, and then finish up with Tom Merritt. So enjoy.
All right, Nerdtacular 2011. I made it out to Utah finally for Scott Johnson's big event. Frog Pants Studios is putting it on, and Veronica Belmont is here. But I wanted to ask you, Veronica, I'm hoping you had a chance to check out the WWDC stuff, all the announcements that Apple made. I know you were at E3, though, right?
Yeah, I was at E3 at the time, so I kind of had to catch up on all that news after the fact a little bit. I heard snippets here and there, but mostly I was kind of focused on gaming at the time.
Focused on the I was on vacation. I take a vacation every year, so I had to do the same thing. And then that's good, actually, because what I'm trying to do is like drill down. You know, during the event, you get the reality distortion field. We all, you know, we're Mac fans, or we get excited about everything Steve's saying. You just kind of nod your head and go, yeah, that's great, and stuff like that. But one of the more significant things that I've been trying to wrap my head around, or I guess two related things, are the stuff that happened at the end with iCloud and saying we're going to demote the Mac to just a device, and sort of what the underlying meaning of that is. And so I'm just, first, what was your impression when you heard kind of those statements and then saw what they're doing with iCloud, and then knowing what's been happening with iOS and the Mac?
Well, I think, you know, you're right. There is that reality distortion field when you first hear about all the great new features and iTunes syncing and uploading. And I'm a little worried about it because I don't know if Apple's had a great track record with cloud functionality in the past, you know, with MobileMe and iDisk and things like that. They didn't really take off the way I think they were going for. And that's because Apple's like a design company. You know, they make really great looking software, they make really great looking hardware, but I'm worried about the back end side of things in terms of maintaining something as huge as iCloud. I mean, that's something Google can do really well, I think, but I don't know if I'm a little concerned if Apple's up to the task or not, and that's yet to be seen. There's a lot of features I think really are cool. I'm not a big iTunes user anymore. I mostly do streaming music services like RDO. And while I would like to have all my iTunes stuff on all my devices, it's not enough of a feature to get me to go back to purchasing hard copies of all my music on an MP3 form or AAC form over iTunes first. If they did have straight-up streaming, that might make me consider it. But downloading to my devices, I don't think that's really something I'm interested in at that point, having physical, not physical media, but, you know, copies of my media on my devices. Only certain things I need that for, like audiobooks and podcasts. I don't really need it for my music. But I don't know. I think the wireless syncing I think is great. There's a lot of really good features, but I think it'll take a while for us to see how this is really working out.
That's interesting that you talk about the streaming piece, and that is something that I've been trying to wrap my head around, because Apple really has sort of, it seems like, is saying, we're not going to make this about streaming, which, as I talk to more and more geek people, more tech people, that's really what they want. And that's why they're excited about what Google's doing and stuff like that. Something I talked about recently on my show is my concern is I'm already running out of storage on my iPad. And it's like, I don't know if I want everything always downloading to it. You know, Apple, you know, they kind of took some digs, I think, at Dropbox, which I love, and I love that it's integrated, but one of the features that I like about it is that my stuff is in the cloud, and when I need it, I grab it, as opposed to this idea of it being pushed down to my device or re-downloaded to my device and sort of have to manage things back and forth. And one of my concerns is that really seems dependent on data. And I know here, even there, you were just on a panel, and you were talking about gaming and streaming, and the question of data caps came up. You know, our 3G is limited. We only have so much streaming or downloading that we can do. So this kind of have to pick and choose. And if we have to be constantly re-downloading anything, so does that kind of play into some of your concerns too?
Well, yeah. I mean, one thing I hadn't even really considered until right now is battery life. Because one of my big problems with my iPhone and my iPad are, you know, even though the battery life has gotten a lot better, on iOS 5 so far for my iPhone, the battery life has been pretty dismal. And I don't know if that's because so much is going on in the background with the location services, but I'm worried that, and I know it's always bad with betas, so all you guys who are thinking out there being like, well, it's just because it's a beta, it's not supposed to be, it's not ready yet. I know, but I'm just worried that with all the syncing going on in the background at all the time, especially with music stuff, it might be an issue. I don't know. Yeah. Certain things I don't mind downloading in the background, like my calendar data. Hey, you guys, we're trying to do a MacCast over here. And certain stuff like calendar and contacts and email even I'm okay with. But it worries me more with stuff like media, like music. That might be an issue.
Right. So, you know, this idea, I do find it interesting, and I'm curious to get your take, this idea of everything being at an equal level. That we're not really, the Mac is just going to be another thing that connects into, I think Steve Jobs is calling this, we're going to basically move the digital hub from being iTunes in your Mac, so the Mac at the center of the universe, to now the Mac is outside that universe and iCloud is the thing that we tap into to sync our music, to sync our contacts, to store our documents, to, I mean, and the idea that we're in this post-PC era, I guess that was the other half of this, is that Apple is saying we don't need a PC for iPads anymore. And that, I think, is part of the announcements that I'm most excited about, and I'm just curious to get your take on that, because I'll give you an example. My in-laws, who have never owned a computer before, they ended up buying an iPad, and on this vacation, my mother-in-law said to me, we absolutely love our iPad, and they have no computer. And now I think it gets better with this idea that they can get software updates, they can back up stuff to their cloud. I don't know if they'll be using iCloud, but I think it is interesting the change that Apple is saying, that the PC is no longer the center of this hub.
Yeah, well, that's one thing that I found really interesting recently, is that there was an article, I think in Business Insider or something, saying that only 50% of people who own an iPhone actually sync it to their Mac. And I think this plays in perfectly with that demographic that doesn't want to have to think about that. They're not really that hands-on with their computers as much as someone like you or I. So I think that's going to make the overall user experience a lot better for a lot of people out there, because they're going to get that wireless updating. They're going to get that kind of background updating that they're not getting now at all. Like, they're not getting the most recent version of the OS. They're not getting all these critical updates to their applications because they're not updating even from the App Store on their device sometimes. So to have that part of the equation solved for them, I think is going to make it a lot easier for most people.
Right. And again, I think the data cap is going to be their only dilemma now, because they're on the lower AT&T plan.
Well, you know, as we were saying in the gaming panel, though, if there's enough of a need from either game companies or someone like Apple, for example, if they're noticing that a lot of their users are having trouble with data caps, it is within their power to go to AT&T or T-Mobile or Verizon and be like, hey, you know, we're seeing this problem. You guys need to figure out, you need to raise the data cap. You need to make your prices more competitive for our users. I think there's a fix in there somewhere. There's some kind of balance.
Yeah, my only dilemma is oftentimes that Apple's strategy to that is, you know, we're so huge and we've got so many users and you need us, and so you'll just do it.
Well, yeah. Well, that's what we're hoping for, being users. Yeah.
So, last question, since you were at E3, a gaming question, because I just saw this, and I know I didn't prep you for this, so if you want to abstain from answering this, that's fine. But OnLive, you mentioned OnLive in the thing, and they just announced a new iPad, or kind of showed off an iPad client. Did you get a chance to get a look at that, or no? What do you think about that, like being able to do OnLive? And that just goes back to this conversation about everything kind of living in the cloud and streaming. Are we seeing a huge transition both in gaming and with the Mac?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great. I don't know what kind of application. Are they going to be all their entire library available, or just certain types of games? Because I can't imagine playing like a real first-person shooter or something on OnLive on my iPad. Like, it might be control-wise a little different.
I think that's what they were demoing, and what they were trying to show off is that we're starting to think about touch, and how does touch interface work with OnLive type games and stuff like that.
Well, I think that would be really cool. I mean, I would love to have more games, more better good games on the iPad. I mean, I actually don't game that much on my iPad. I still really like the console/TV/PC kind of experience. I use my iPad for different things, I guess.
And so I guess now I'm going to ask another last question because now you piqued my interest. And I'm sure if my interest is piqued, my listeners' interest is piqued. So what are those other things that you typically use your iPad for?
I use it for a lot of writing, actually. I take it with me when I'm going on shoots or when I'm going on business trips. And I need it for script writing and for, you know, making creative briefs for projects. I use it for email, web browsing, of course, and HBO Go. I am an HBO Go addict at this point. I love it. I've watched the past like six seasons of Entourage all in like 2 weeks. So it's fun. Yeah.
I'm that way with Netflix. And so what are some of your favorite writing tools and what are you using? And also probably I'm assuming you sync stuff to the cloud too, maybe Dropbox.
I do. I use GoodReader actually on the iPad to sync to Dropbox and Google Docs and pretty much everything else out there. You can do FTP uploading and downloading, syncing files. I think it's one of the best productivity applications out there. And I think it's only $4.99. It's not that expensive. I also use Pages. I don't have Pages, ironically, I don't have Pages on my Mac. Mm-hmm. I use Google Docs for everything when I'm home. But I use Pages on my iPad just because the experience is really fluid and nice.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, thanks for taking a few minutes. I know you're super busy schedule and always traveling around doing lots of stuff, but it was great to see you here. And thanks for chatting with us for a second.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, we're still here at Nerdtacular 2011, and I actually ran into Mike Schramm from TUAW. I wasn't expecting to see you here, but it was a really nice surprise. So I'm asking people in the Mac community sort of about getting past the reality distortion field that happens with the WWDC announcements. We kind of all, you know, really like to hear what Steve has to say, but now we've had a couple weeks starting to dig in a little bit deeper to the ramifications of, real specifically, I'm getting a lot of people asking about the statement he made about demoting the Mac to being just a device and sort of putting it on equal footing with iOS and moving the hub, our digital hub, from iTunes and the Mac more to the cloud. And so, you know, what's been your take and an analysis that's been going on since WWDC on those subjects?
Sure. Well, there's a lot of stuff in there, first of all. The very first thing I'll say is Nerdtacular is awesome. And the reason I'm here is because I do a podcast with Terpster, who is on the Instance with Scott Johnson. And it's the podcast we do is called The Incredible Podcast, Amazing Awesomeness. You're all welcome to check it out. It's a lot of fun. And there hopefully are some fans of the podcast around here. But yeah, I like Scott Johnson very well, and I really enjoy coming out here, and it's good to see you. I was just telling you before we started, I predicted two things would happen this year, and they both come true. And I don't mean to brag too much, even because there are a lot of people who are saying this, but I was like, I threw my weight behind it back in December. The first thing I predicted was that Line was going to be available only on the Mac App Store. And the second thing that I predicted was that Apple would finally introduce the cloud service. And of course, at WWDC, we finally got iCloud. In terms of talking about the Mac as a device, I think, and this is why I thought Line would eventually come to the App Store only, is because what Apple really wants is for your Mac to be like your iPhone, in that you don't have to worry about files, you don't have to worry about any of the ins and outs of computery jargon and all the stuff we've had to deal with all the time that computers have been around. They want it to be like, if you want an app, you hit this button, you have that app. That's just the way they want it to work. For a long time, they couldn't do that because they didn't have the Mac App Store, because you had to go and find your apps all from different developers. You had to find them in the retail stores. You had to install them with a disk. Some of them came on disk. Some of them just downloaded. They were from all over the place. The Mac App Store was the real key to that. And I think with the Mac App Store, they're moving towards, they can control all the apps that you get, where they're from, what versions they are, what they look like, where those files are. They can even use iCloud now to keep track of all those files from your apps, and you never even have to deal with that. All your Pages documents live in Pages, or they can be pulled up from another thing, but you don't have to worry about where is that file, what is it doing, where is that keeping. So I don't know. The value judgment on that is, oh, well, I like my Mac to do all the things that the iPhone can't do. And that's true to a certain extent. I don't want like all my apps to only take up one screen. I like seeing three different apps running at the same time when I've got Twitter running and IRC running and my blogging going. And I don't think I think the users will call for that and will need that. Or Jobs and Apple will come up with some way to do that we haven't thought of yet. That's the other option. Like it might not just be all full screen. They'll come up with some other way to do that. I agree that there are concerns there. But yeah, I think Apple really wants to go to that one OS, one experience where you don't have to worry about any of the computer background junk. It runs it all for you, and you just click and drag, and you install apps the way you want to. I mean, that's my thinking. There's a lot of stuff in there as well, but go ahead. Sorry. Sure.
No, so I want one thing. I want two things I think I want to ask you about there then, though, because I'm getting a lot of questions from people. There's a lot of questions up in the air about Lion being distributed only on the App Store. One that I have is I really like to clean install my operating system every year when a new OS comes out. And the way it's sounding right now, everything I'm reading and hearing is that, well, you're going to have Leopard, Snow Leopard installed first, and then download it from the App Store, and then you can put Lion on top of that. So what's your take on that? I mean, is that going to work? And or is there something Apple hasn't told us that's going to be some magic option to deal with that?
Yeah, well, I'll make more predictions. And I'll get into the reason why Apple wants the Mac to be so like the iPhone is so that they can sell new Macs, obviously. They're going to release a new iPhone basically every year, and that's not confirmed or anything. I'm not saying there's going to be an iPhone out for sure. But they want you to buy new hardware when it comes out. Because right now, you have your Mac for 5-6 years if you're really cheap like me, and you don't need to buy a new Mac all the time. But what they want you to do is the hardware becomes less and less of a big purchase and more of a, oh, there's a hot new Mac out. I've really got to pick it up. And the way they do that is by making your operating system completely separated from the hardware itself. So what the Mac App Store will eventually allow them to do, and I think they'll be doing this with iCloud, it'll be you buy your new Mac, you log in, you hit a button. All that stuff that was on your Mac that you would normally have to run in after a clean install, all just installs on itself. Just like you buy a new iPhone and you activate it and set up your account and do that thing. I think that's what Apple's eventually aiming for. Are they going to be able to do that right away? Not right now. Not yet. I don't know what they're going to do in terms of clean install and how you install Lion. But my guess is like you will buy a Mac, you will bring it home, and it won't work. It'll have a screen that says, please set this up, or please put your account in, or please create an iTunes account, or whatever you need to create. I hope they stop calling iTunes someday. But yeah, please, it'll say, please sign up with Apple. When you sign up with Apple, all your settings come in, and that'll be the equivalent of what a clean install is nowadays. And you say, I want to do a clean install, and that's true. I want to be able to handle my files in the way that we can on PC, and I want to edit files directly and like open them in Vim and Emacs and do all that stuff. That's not really what Apple's pushing for. That's not what Jobs has ever wanted. So we'll see. I agree that there are a lot of questions. I agree that they have to figure some things out. I think they will have to figure some things out. Like there'll be a clean install mode or something, like something where you can just boot up a Mac. That maybe we'll have jailbroken Macs in the future. Like you'll just buy a Mac and you'll have to jailbreak it if you want to do that type of stuff. But that's my suspicion. Again, I'm not 100% sure on how it's going to work. All the Macs I have are running Snow Leopard, which is probably bad for me because I need to research. But that's the way it's going to work for me. I'm just going to buy Lion day one and roll with it, and we'll see what happens. So.
Right. So there's a lot in there. I like this idea though of, you know, once Apple, that they're laying a groundwork. And I think we've seen them do this multiple times with different technologies. iOS is probably the best example of that. I mean, it came out, it was missing a lot of what many people felt were key features. In this latest announcement, and I want to get your take on this, it seems like they've really brought it to maturity and answered a lot of the questions. I'm hearing a lot of people say, you know what, they really have solved the notification problem that it had, some of the things that some of the other competitors were doing, making it even harder on those competitors who are already struggling to compete. It's like Apple's now, I don't want to say caught up, because it was like they were already kind of ahead, but there were some features missing. And it feels like with this merger, maybe that's they're trying to bring that back to the Mac platform and bring that, like you're saying, that simplicity of iOS there, but it's going to take a few years. I guess my one concern, and I'm curious if you have this as well, is just that a lot of the loyal people who are used to doing it a certain way are going to backlash a little bit. But I think we saw that with iOS too, right?
Yeah, no. To go back to the original point, yeah, from WWDC, I'm super excited about iOS 5. The number one thing I'm excited about is the thing that I wanted before, the night before when we wrote about it on the unofficial Apple weblog, which is a new home screen, a new way to deal with all this stuff. The most astonishing thing about iOS 5 from WWDC for me is that Apple finally, for the first time that I can remember in the history of the iOS, took cues from another smartphone. Like they finally said, oh, wait, someone else did something better. And that even copy and paste, like copy and paste was something where we were like, how do you not release this with copy and paste? But even other smartphones had that problem. This is the first situation where Jobs and Apple are like, oh, right, notifications. Other people have done that better. Let's figure this out. I don't know what the future of iOS is after iOS 5 because I don't know what you can do new now. I don't know. I'm not going to even speculate on those ends. I'm sure Apple will have to come up with something. But then to go back to the other thing, like, yeah, I think iOS 5 is going to be really exciting to see because of those reasons, because it kind of catches up where they're at and sort of, I mean, to a certain extent, it feels like it's putting the lid on iOS, doesn't it? Like, you're right. A lot of the issues that we've had are getting fixed in iOS 5, and maybe more issues will arise, and then they'll just have to fix those. But to a certain extent, it feels like iOS 5 is, like, the end of an era for iPhone, so we have to see something weird. I don't know.
I think it's bringing it to maturity, and one of the directions that I'm going to speculate a little bit and say that they might go is we're starting to see OS X borrow some features from iOS and this back and forth. And I really thought we might see more of this at WWDC, but I think there's a groundwork. Again, I think a lot of this WWDC was, all right, we've done everything with the desktop operating system. We've done everything with the mobile operating system. We're adding this new hub piece, and we're moving it to the cloud, and now we're starting something new here. We're starting a new way of computing and thinking about devices and thinking about platform, throwing out terms like PC-free. You know, they're kind of saying, we're not going to call these things PCs anymore. It's really changing the dynamic, and I think they're looking to, what are we going to do for the next 10 years, right? Where are we going the next 10? And Apple seems to have always done that, at least in my opinion.
I think the real innovation in that sense is the thinning, literally, of the hardware. The thinning in terms of the role of the hardware. And so that, you know, that is the only thing that I can think that would really push. Because right now, I mean, even you look around here, there's a lot of Android smartphones. You know, they mentioned Android in the audience, and people were excited about Android as much in terms of gaming as iPhone. You're already seeing, like, the Wii U, and you are crazy if you don't think that Microsoft and Sony are going to take this full year that Nintendo has given them and put every second into coming up with something that beats the Wii U that they can announce at next year's E3. And I think it will have some sort of element of touchscreen or cross compatibility and different things like that, all borrowed from iOS and the way that they built it. So yeah, I think the next, if you're gonna speculate at a future, and again, we get in trouble for doing this in Apple so often in the Apple media, but if you're gonna speculate at a future, yeah, I think you're right. A lot of the groundwork has been laid. Clearly, iCloud is only the beginning of what they can put in the cloud and how they can transfer it around and how that stuff syncs. I mean, maybe one of the problems with iCloud will be, man, I wish this stuff would sync up faster. So the next iteration of iCloud is it syncs faster, it's more bandwidth, it works over, you know, it works everywhere in the country, it works over 3G that much easier. Because iCloud's only Wi-Fi still. It's still only Wi-Fi. So maybe the next year when we're waiting for a Steve note, we'll be like, maybe he'll announce iCloud over a different type of internet connection. But yeah, I think it would be that thinning of the hardware where the iPhone's cheaper because it's not as much stuff. It's you're just sending more things to the cloud. You don't need to worry about the hardware as much.
So you brought up iCloud, and obviously that's another major piece. Somebody pointed out the fact that on that banner, OS X, iOS, and iCloud were all, you know, kind of on equal footing, kind of showing that Apple is really thinking about that. One of the concerns, and I just talked about this with Veronica Belmont, with iCloud, is Apple's taking a different approach to cloud computing than a lot of the people like Google or Amazon. And it came up in the keynote that those guys are putting stuff into the cloud, and then you sort of access it from the cloud, whereas Apple's taking more of this syncing push strategy, this hub, this idea of a hub, and stuff gets pushed out. I'm not so sure how excited I am about that because I'm running out of space on my iPad. I don't know if I want all my documents in Pages always pushed out to all my devices. And I'm hoping that there's going to be something we haven't seen yet. There are some controls. I mean, what do you think about that strategy that Apple's saying, you know, it's more of your documents are going to be on all your devices, not that you're kind of reaching into the cloud and accessing things. And they're doing the same thing with the music. Even the Music Match service is more about downloading the stuff that you've purchased or pulling it down from the cloud and storing it on your device.
Yeah, far be it from me to tell Steve Jobs when he's going to lose, but if that trend continues and Apple really goes with syncing versus access to, like, Dropbox-style access to your information from anywhere. I can't see Apple winning with that type of strategy. And I don't think that they've declared a strategy yet. I do agree with you that they're leaning towards Sync, and I don't think that they've said, yes, this is the way we're going. I am bummed about iTunes Match because I have my iPhone. My iPhone, because of my work with Tua, full of apps. I originally had, like, my three favorite albums on it and all my favorite podcasts. Then I had to get rid of the albums, and I just had podcasts. And now I can't even do that. Like, I just have to have apps that stream podcasts to me because all the other information, all the other memory is taken up with apps. And I was really looking forward to an iTunes service where I have music on my home computer. I can press a button on my iPad, and instead of playing Pandora, it'll play music from my home computer. That's not what iTunes Match is, unfortunately. And so I'll probably get iTunes Match because I have multiple computers around the house. But I still can't use it in the way that I want to use it, which is what I'm doing with Pandora. I don't have any music on my iPhone. I just stream it off. What I'm doing with Amazon and Google Music and all these other services have been introduced. Again, I'm never going to say Jobs is going to lose. Right. But I agree with you that if Apple sticks to the sync thing too long, you're going to run into trouble. Now, maybe that's the opposite of what I said before. Apple still wants to sell hardware. And if you're going to sync it up, you need to sync it up to some type of hardware. But I really think that, you know, the more ubiquitous, serious internet connections get and the more of these services we get. I mean, Dropbox is magic, man. Yeah. It's magical. You put a file here and it's over here as well. Like, it's all in the same place. And Dropbox is technically a sync service. Those files exist on your hard drive. But it feels like, I mean, it still is up in the cloud because when I pull up my Dropbox app on my iPhone, those files aren't on my iPhone. I just grab them whenever I want. I put ebooks, I buy ebook files on my computer. I put them up in a Dropbox. Whenever I want to read them on my iPhone, I just pull that out right there too. So yeah, we'll see. I agree. iCloud is sort of a starter, and Apple's got to be testing the waters as well. I'm sure they're testing the waters way more than we've heard about. Like, I'm sure there's lots more iCloud services that we haven't heard about. But yeah, it's fascinating. And even Sony, I was just at E3 last week, which is why I keep coming back to games, but the stuff that they're doing with the Vita in terms of translating across, and you play a game here and then you put it down and you can go play it on another platform, but it's the same game and your same spot and all that stuff. We're going to see so much more of that type of stuff coming around, and as ubiquitous as smartphones are and gaming is, it'll be much more that way. Like, you won't even have to save documents and sync them up. You'll just open them up over here and they'll be ready to go.
Yeah, so because we're at Nerdtacular, we have to talk about games, I think, and that's what I want to finish up on, because it's come up a couple times in these panels, as you mentioned, whether it's Android games. I think somebody at this just last session I was listening to brought up the idea of set-top boxes, and more services. I talked to Veronica Belmont about OnLive, which is a pure streaming service. This is a cloud service where you're streaming your games. All the processing is done on the server, and obviously iOS has made an impact on the game industry, and there's nobody can argue that. They're kind of scrambling on, you know, hey, these things are competing with us at these small little games, and it's a whole different market. And I think Nintendo was one of the big ones that was mentioned as impacted. So just what's your general sense on the iOS platform and gaming, and maybe even further the concept of, could the Apple TV become a streaming interface to things like OnLive and some of these other gaming services? I'm kind of excited about maybe the fact that that could happen.
It's going faster than we can report on it, man. Just today, Engadget posted the video in iOS 5, which is technically still under developer NDA, which a lot of our Tua people are also still covered under developer NDA. But no, they just posted the video of Real Racing. You know, anything you see on your iPad can be sent across to the Apple TV. That is basically a console. We now have an Apple console with iOS 5, because anything you run on the iPad you can go across. OnLive was at E3. They were, I think, showing off an app on the iPad. I mean, that's not far off at all. Also, this is another crazy prediction. We have a thing on TOAW called Kelly's House of Crackpot Theories, and this is kind of a crackpot theory, but I think it's going to happen very soon. OnLive is such a crazy, magical service, and I don't know if your listeners have ever used it or if you've ever used it, but it's really insane the way it works. It really is cloud gaming. It really does stream information back to you so quickly that you can run it on any single device. I'm going to say that I think OnLive is going to be bought sooner or later by someone like Microsoft or Sony, and your PS3 will run OnLive games. And maybe it'll just be OnLive style. It'll be like Sony Live, and you'll just run, or PlayStation Live, and you'll just run games that way. But I think that, man, it's too awesome a service to just stick to that little OnLive box, which you can get for free now too. That's the other thing. Like, this stuff is happening so fast. You can buy a game and OnLive will send you a box for free. You don't even have to pay for their hardware. that's how thin the hardware is that just receives the signal. Like, they can just give it away for free. And that's the future, I think. You know, that's what we were saying, too. The hardware gets thinner. Apple can sell iPhones for $50, for $25. Like, you can start doing stuff like that when the hardware is so thin, you're just streaming video and streaming cloud information to it. I don't know. I just made a lot of crazy predictions in there. I don't know how many of them are actually going to come true. But, yes, cloud is moving insanely quickly. The service is awesome. And then the flip side of that, as was mentioned in the panel earlier, bandwidth. Like, Netflix currently is a problem for a lot of bandwidth people. I've talked to people who work at Time Warner and who work at Comcast and who are like, we don't know what we're going to do, because every night at 7 o'clock, the bandwidth levels all spike because everybody gets home and starts watching Netflix. I don't know how we're going to pay for bandwidth like that. And I don't want to pay... as a consumer, too. I don't want to just pay a higher Time Warner bill. I want to pay for the bandwidth that I use. So we'll see. I don't know how it's all going to turn out. But yeah, I think cloud will be definitely bigger, obviously. That's not a hard prediction to make. And I do think that OnLive will, I mean, either someone's going to rip them off and it'll be like Xbox Live at home and you'll just stream, you know, you won't even have to worry about downloading the games anymore. Or someone will just outright buy OnLive. Like, I don't know how much money OnLive is actually making. As awesome as they're doing, I don't know how much they're making. So I'm guessing that some gigantic hardware company will buy them. It'll be a service. You'll have Netflix, you'll have Pandora, you'll have Facebook, you'll have OnLive all on your Xbox or whatever, and then you'll just play things that way. So that's my guess. Whether Apple will get in on that, maybe, I don't know. Like, you could put OnLive on the Apple TV if someone doesn't buy OnLive and Microsoft just includes it. But then the problem is that takes a chunk out of Microsoft's main gaming thing in the Xbox. If you put OnLive on the Xbox, it's great for consumers, bad for retailers, because that's where Microsoft money is and all the publishers. But if Apple doesn't want to make their own console, they put Xbox Live, they put OnLive on Apple TV, then you have a really interesting configuration there, because then all these publishers have a reason to sell through Apple.
Or you just put it on the iPad, you know, the iPad app, and then stream it to the TV, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's on the TV anyway. Yeah, it's moving so quickly. What's really going to happen is not us media pundits are not going to be the people that decides whether OnLive succeeds or who buys it or what happens. What's really going to happen is consumers. What's going to happen is when you sit down in front of your TV and you've got six boxes plugged into it, I don't want that future to happen, but that's the current situation for a lot of people. Chris Grant at Joystick, we were just talking about this at E3. He was like, oh man, I'm going to get an OnLive box from Rock. And I'm like, dude, how many things do you have plugged into your television? And he's like, I've got 12 things plugged in right now. I've got Roku, I've got Apple TV, I've got Xbox Live, I've got PlayStation 3. Like, I don't want that to happen, but what's going to happen is people will sit down, they'll have all this stuff plugged into their TV, and the question will be, which one did they turn on? And whichever one they turn on and use, that's the one that's going to quote-unquote win. That's the one everyone's going to use.
Well, that's why my guess is that Apple is looking at, I mean, you look at what they're doing with it. I'm super excited about AirPlay, and I'm thinking, we're seeing these streaming things, if Apple can just go, well, we've got all the apps on the iPad, you're sitting down at the TV with your iPad, which we already know people are doing, right? We gave you a button. You press this button and you're playing on your TV. You haven't plugged anything into your TV. Zero. So you're going from 12 to zero. Yeah.
That's a good button, and I hate to ruin, because that's a good way to end the conversation. But the problem there is developers. If I'm a developer selling an iPad app and people can just go and play it on their TV, shouldn't I also be able to sell a TV? Like I'm losing out on that sale a little bit. And what if the iPad app resolution doesn't quite match up to the TV? Like, if I'm FireMint, I want that to look just as good on the TV as it looks on the iPad. Like, that's the real issue that I see happening, is it is a whole other platform. Apple's just sort of sneaking it in under AirPlay. Developers might not be so happy about that. And publishers especially, like EA... I have heard, can I say this or is it off the record? I've heard that Microsoft is not happy about what's happening on iOS because it's taking a chunk out of downloadable titles specifically. And that is a little spooky. Like, iOS is seriously cutting into real traditional gaming. Like, before it was like, oh, look, it's reaching a brand new casual gaming audience. This is just a whole new audience that Apple has created. At this point, that's not the case. I'm a guy that used to buy Call of Duty and play Call of Duty, and now I'm going home and playing Fruit Ninja. And even, like, Fruit Ninja Connect, which I played at E3, it's going to be insane. But yeah, that's cutting into the traditional gaming audience. And when that stuff starts cutting in and you start, you know, seeing Call of Duty lose revenues over iOS games, then Activision's going to be like, oh, we got to start playing dirty, and you're going to have some real fireballs going back and forth.
Very interesting. All interesting stuff to think about. So, yeah, no, that's all right. So I think the button to end on is that definitely I think Apple is laying a groundwork here, and we're going to have to sit back and watch for a little bit while longer to figure it all out. Yeah. But Mike Tram, I want to thank you from TUAW. If people want to, obviously, Tua, they can find you at, but Twitter, other places that people can follow you if they want to catch up on more info and your thoughts and stuff.
Yeah, it's TUAW.com is our then official Apple weblog. Great team over there, and we're all over the place on Apple stuff all the time. I also work on joystick.com, where you can read about lots of gaming stuff. It's JOYSTIQ. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Mike Schramm, SCHRAMM is my last name. And say hello and say that you heard this, and then I'll be like, oh, thank you, and I'll send you a message back. I'll appreciate that.
All right, cool. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks very much.
All right, I'm able to sit down here at Nerdtacular with Tom Merritt. This is a great show. Scott Johnson has to get a lot of credit. I know you do a couple shows with him. First, tell everybody about those shows.
Yeah, so on the Frog Pants Network, I do East Meets West with Roger Chang, which is really a show about nothing. We just kind of talk about whatever comes into our mind. I call it my recreational podcast. And then the main show, Sword and Laser, with Veronica Belmont, which is science fiction and fantasy book club that we also do a podcast around our selections and news in the science fiction fantasy book world.
And then, of course, you do the news show occasionally with Scott?
Well, the morning stream, I do a Current Geek on every Wednesday, where we just kind of talk about the geeky stories of the week.
And then on the Twit Network, of course.
Yeah, and then Tech News Today and all the other Twit shows.
Okay, so a lot of people know Tom, but what I wanted to get down and talk to some of the people here about is a lot of us are Mac users and we follow Apple, and I know that's not your primary thing, but I wanted to get your take on sort of what happened at WWDC. I'm trying to get past all of the hype and everything we've been hearing. I mean, you get the reality distortion feel and it's calmed down after a couple weeks. So just what was your general take on what Apple announced with iCloud and demoting the Mac to being just quote unquote a device?
Yeah, a lot of people have made a lot of the Mac being demoted, and I don't think the Mac is being demoted. I think what Apple is acknowledging is that they have much more successful devices than the Mac, and that desktops and laptops are not going away, and they're not going to stop making them, but they have a much larger user base in these other devices, and they need to focus on that. I also think they are taking very conservative, well-thought steps into the cloud, and they're going to get a lot of flack for that because they're not doing the coolest, niftiest things you can do with the cloud. But that's Apple doesn't always do. I mean, remember, Apple doesn't do things early. The iPod was not the first music player. What Apple wants to be known for, and they usually do it with success, is being the best at something. And so with iCloud, I feel like this is them saying, look, we haven't been the best with network services up to now. Mobile Me was a disaster at first, and Steve Jobs even alluded to that on stage. But we think we finally figured out how to make good use of this. And I'm actually impressed by the boldness of the iTunes Match situation with a very hostile recording industry that actually wants to break away from Apple, getting them to agree to essentially amnesty for $25 a year. I mean, we can debate what it really means and whether people will actually use it that way, but I think that's pretty significant.
Right. It's funny. I don't want to. I brought up this word demoting a couple times, and I think you made a great point. It's not really that they're demoting it, but Steve Jobs threw that word out there, so a lot of us are, getting on. And that's the distortion field that I'm talking about. You come away and you think about this stuff. I want to ask you a little bit more about the Match stuff, because I talked with Veronica and talked with a couple other people in the tech community, and all of us kind of seem to want streaming. I mean, I was really hoping for a streaming component, but just with the Match service and also with what Apple's doing with the cloud, which is really different, it seems like they're saying streaming, pulling stuff off the server isn't really where we're going. We're more about syncing and moving the digital hub from iTunes and the Mac over to this service. So what's just your general take on that? I mean, is it Apple doing what they typically do and focusing on the consumer and not really catering to the geeks, and they're going to get past that and probably be successful? Or I'll let you give your take on it.
Yeah, I wonder about that too, because at first blush you think, well, streaming seems to be the safer option, right? There's no piracy risk there, or very little piracy risk there. So you'd think that's what the recording industry would be up to. But if you look around, Spotify having a hard time getting streaming content, contracts in place so that they can bring their service to the United States. Other streaming services sort of being seen as not paying enough money. And I think there may be just a big gap between the amount of money a provider is willing to pay the recording industry to provide music for a streaming service and the amount of money the recording industry wants to make, whereas they know they'll make a lot more money selling tracks. And so Apple's saying, well, look, streaming isn't a mature industry yet anyway, streaming of music or TV shows. That's all very in its infancy, but selling tracks is mature now, and Apple's helped make it that way. So I think they realized if we just avoid that whole streaming morass and let the industry work itself out, we can strike a deal with the recording industry the way Google, Amazon, Spotify, and others haven't been able to.
So one of the concerns that we've talked about with a couple of people, you know, with respect to the stuff being in the cloud and this sinking back down, and it came up a couple of times in the conversations that have been going on here at Nerdtacular around the gaming and doing streaming and more cloud services, was the bandwidth concerns. Do you think that's, I mean, you mentioned Apple having problems in the past with their cloud services, with network services. And this different approach to me, I'm worried about how much data I'm going to have to pull down from the cloud if everything's being pushed out to all my devices. I have Macs, I have iPhones, I have iPads. What's your take on, I mean, how does that get resolved?
I think this is going to be kind of an ugly, uncomfortable battle, but I don't think it's really going to get bad. Because it's not in the ISP's best interests to be seen as people throttling innovation. Right, they're already under enough scrutiny and enough criticism that if suddenly a company were to say, hey, I would like, you know, like Apple were to say, I would like iCloud to work, but it can't because the ISPs have put in bandwidth caps, then, you know, the case for regulation starts to rear its ugly head. The ISPs don't want that. I think their bandwidth caps are really just them in a situation where they don't have a lot of competition, managing costs as closely as they can. And that's why we haven't seen we've seen Comcast say, well, we have a 250 gigabyte cap. That's so they can go in and send a letter to somebody who's really abusing it and saying, well, we do have a policy now. You can't say, well, it says unlimited. It's not unlimited anymore. But you haven't heard of anyone actually being cut off for reaching that cap, and they don't even really give you a way to track it. So it's more of a covering their ass sort of thing, I think, than it is a serious limit. Now, it can become that very fast, and in Canada, it's actually getting close to that because the CRTC is saying, well, you know, Bell can put in these limits and pass them along. And in that case, it's going to make that conversation a lot more uncomfortable. But in the end, the ISPs don't win by limiting what you can do on the internet. They win by keeping that cap just close enough that you're always able to do everything you want to do, but you're motivated to pay for that more expensive tier. And you see that with the data cards from carriers and from mobile carriers, which used to be quite punitive. You would get maybe a gigabyte at best for $70, $80 a month. And if you went over, the charges were usurious. It was basically don't go over because you can't afford it. Then it went to 5 gigabytes, but it was still a huge penalty. If you went over 5 gigabytes, you were going to be paying double your rate for not even going a gigabyte over your cap. Now they've changed that. They realize, okay, people are using these cards for more and more things, and we want to keep them as customers. We want to keep them paying us. Even if there isn't a lot of competition, they need to be able to make use of the service we're providing. Otherwise, we're going to get in trouble in a lot of arenas, including the press and including with regulation. So now they have, you get 5 gigabytes for $50, much cheaper. You get 10 gigabytes for $80. So we can have an $80 tier. And every 10 gigabytes over that, you pay another $10. So that now when you go over, you're not killing yourself, you're just paying a little more money. It becomes much more reasonable. I think that's what the regular wired ISPs are trying to get to, is we just want to make as much money off you as possible. We don't want to cut off bandwidth.
Yeah, that's a great point. And as we use more and more, they're going to have to come up with solutions. I think you're right. I mean, there's a lot of people, I know a lot of people who are paying a certain tier and using far less. And I think that's a more common problem for them. So if they can find that top percentage and just get the revenue they need out of that. So the other thing I want to come back to is this idea of the devices being all kind of at the same level. And with everything being at the same level, you had talked a little bit earlier about Apple not wanting to jump in and be the first at a lot of stuff, but really be the best at it. And I when I was talking with Mike Schramm from TUAW, it kind of came up with this thought of, and I want to get your take on it, what is Apple building some sort of foundation now? We've had macOS 10 mature to a certain state, and you can only take these things so far. iOS, a lot of people are saying now Apple solved a lot of the problems that the competitors have been, you know, complaining against, notifications being a huge one there. And now we have iCloud coming into it and Apple bringing those types of services. Is this Apple sort of laying the foundation for a new era of post-PC, I'll use Apple's term, post-PC computing? I mean, what does that mean and what does that world look like? Is that what we're seeing now?
Yeah, and what they've done with the iPad and the iPod Touch, I think a lot of people forget that that was actually the first arena in which this post-PC era started to appear, is make computing accessible to folks who just don't get computers. Or if they did have a computer, they used it for email and word processing, and that's it. Now, a lot more people feel comfortable picking up an iPod Touch or an iPad and saying, oh, I get this, I can use this. Now, a lot of geeks look at it and they love it, but they also don't like how locked down it is. But it's not meant for them. It's okay for them. But this post-PC era, I think, is taking computers and saying, let's forget their computers. Let's turn them into appliances. And that's a cyclical thing that we've actually seen before. I mean, the first PC era was breadboards and Heath kits, right? Yeah. And then it went into these self-contained machines that were moddable, and then it kind of went into consoles like Commodore 64s and everything. Then it started to go back into being, you know, a little more wide open. Now we've shifted from desktops to laptops to tablets. I think we've, you know, I hesitate to say we've exhausted all of the form factors, but I think we're starting to get the form factors nailed down, and we're going to explore what all these can do. Desktops are never going to be dead because they're good for certain things. Laptops are never going to be dead because for certain things you need a keyboard. But we're moving to a point, which I remember reading an MIT article about 12 years ago, which was, in the future, you're going to pick your device based on what you need to do with it versus having software on a device and trying to force it to do anything. So all of your data, all of your software will be everywhere. And when you're, you know, need to be mobile, you'll have a small device. Well, you see that now. That's our smartphone. And when you, and you know, in certain cases, you'll need a medium-sized device, and that may be a laptop or a tablet. And I think where Apple is steering us is towards that, saying we're going to start moving more and more essential stuff into the cloud as you need it, still provide you the power you need when you need it on a laptop. But that's not for everybody anymore. Like people are not using all the bandwidth when they subscribe to it, not everybody uses all the power of a laptop computer, and they don't necessarily need it.
Right. Yeah. And I think I have to wonder if Apple sort of rethinking this and going after the consumer market. I think they're very good at finding the market that's going to bring them the most revenue early on, and then moving into the smaller markets. And as much as we as tech nerd people want all the power that's in there, I think Apple sees, you know, they're sort of consumerizing things. I think when they dropped that ink from the Apple name, that was, or the computer from the Apple name, excuse me, that was really significant. And I think, just like with iOS, a lot of people with what Apple's doing with iCloud and sort of this post-PC stuff, consumers are going to love it. Geeks aren't going to be indifferent or hate it at first. But like the iPad, I see the iPad. So many people who were tech nerds that said, the iPad's not for me. But now they're hearing about iOS 5 and they're going, oh, now it might be time, right? But Apple's kind of reached a lot of the consumers, I think, right?
Yeah, Apple is positioning itself as an experience company. They want to sell you a way of feeling about what you're doing and about creativity and not wanting to sell you devices and not wanting to sell you raw power or productivity even. It's more about when you use Apple products, things are easy and you're part of this experience and you can be creative. And you see that in their advertising. They've been doing that for a long time, but now we're really seeing the fruition of that, where, you know, they don't sell servers anymore because they're basically committed to, we are a consumer company. We'll sell to the enterprise, but we'll sell for the desktop. We don't need to be powering the mainframe. We don't need to be, you know, selling the front part of the store as well as the furnaces and the things. You know, we'll be happy with the things that we're really good at.
Cool. Last question I want to ask you about, because we're at Nerdtacular, gaming came up, and I talked with a couple people here about this. On the panel, we talked about the cycling of, you know, things moving to console on the gaming market and then back, and Apple's created kind of a new shakeup with portable computing and the iOS devices. Just give a couple of your thoughts on what's happening there, and what's the future role Apple plays with iOS and you know, iPod, iPhone apps and stuff like that in that new kind of gaming world.
Yeah. I mean, Apple is definitely a contender in casual gaming. In fact, they are the leader in phone gaming and tablet gaming. They're also the leader in tablets right now for the time being. Without competitor yet. Android will change that. It'll become competitive. But even so, Apple is the leader in that kind of casual gaming. They're less of a leader in laptop, desktop gaming, even though they have a lot of casual games in the App Store. I'm interested to see where that Mac App Store goes in that respect. It's interesting that Steam is now available on the Mac, and you can get a lot of your games that way. I still think the non-casual gamer is going to want a Windows machine, because of the power available that you can get. Not that Mac, Apple doesn't make powerful gaming machine, or they don't make powerful machines.
We could be honest about it.
But yeah, they're not powerful gaming machines.
The hardcore gamer is not going to get a Mac.
Exactly. Those powerful machines are powerful for Final Cut and all kinds of other things, but they really just don't take advantage of gaming that well, and the gaming industry doesn't provide that source for them either. So I it's funny, myself, I used to game on my Mac desktop a lot more, and just, you know, used consoles for games that I couldn't get for the Mac. I actually have gone and bought a desktop PC again, and I do most of my gaming on that. And my laptop is back, you know, my MacBook Pro is back to just being the machine that I do everything else on. But I don't game on it as much.
Yeah, I'm going to backpedal a little bit too. That's not saying the Mac isn't a powerful gaming machine, but I think that, you know, there's a lot of gamers that live both, right? They have titles they want on both. I mean, you can do a lot, like you said, with games on the Mac, but I still think I see and hear that people who really want, you know, the latest and greatest graphics card, the latest and greatest titles, and everything cranked up to full maximum, they're doing both. You know, they love Macs, and the PC has a place there too.
I think Apple realized what Nintendo realized, which is there's a huge market of people who will play video games if they're the right games. And it was presaged by the facts that the most popular games online were from Yahoo. They were Solitaire. They were Tetris. They were casual games. Nintendo and Apple both said, we can make a ton of money there. We don't have to be the hardcore platform. And it's worked for both of them.
Another thing that came up was gaming on set-top boxes, and we talked a little bit about the OnLive service. They demoed at E3 an iPad, you know, thing for OnLive. And so what's your take on streaming gaming, and will we ever see gaming or even casual games come to something like the Apple TV?
Yeah, I think we could see casual games come to the Apple TV. I think you could even see something like OnLive come to the Apple TV. I wouldn't expect to see OnLive take off a lot on the iPad, just because the input mechanism just isn't right. You need to design a game for a touchscreen only interface. And a lot of people do, and they're great. But I don't see you just picking up, you know, Batman Arkham Asylum on an iPad, streaming it on live and playing it a lot, or, you know, or World of Warcraft, even if you got rid of the lag. I think you have to have a special version for tablets and smartphones and that. But on an Apple TV, that's, you know, that's an infrared controller. Conceivably, somebody just markets a controller for it, and you could start running some pretty cool games there.
Yeah, you know, I lied, because one last question, because you brought up the interface thing and designing for an interface, and a number of people have pointed out that Lion really has a lot of multi-touch stuff in there. Seems to be ideal for trackpads and for touch. And is Apple saying the mouse is gone and this is going to be the new way to do interfaces, and our developers are going to have to be thinking about designing and building for touch for tablets and these types of devices?
Yeah, I think that's a slow movement. Apple has always been trying to put multi-touch gestures in there. You know, when they made the trackpad multi-touch in the first case, I use two fingers to scroll and stuff like that, but it's very limited what I actually do. And I think what they're acknowledging is, we're really good at touchscreen stuff. There's no reason to waste that. Let's add that. Let's add that in, but let's add that in a way that makes sense. Let's take that pinch and zoom experience and figure out how to make it work, because we're good at it. Why would we waste that? But I, you know, I always feel like Steve Jobs hates buttons, and if he could, he'd just get rid of the keyboard. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't want to connect Mac yet, quite yet.
No, exactly.
All right, great, Tom. Thank you so much for taking some time out to talk with us. If you know, we mentioned a couple of your shows, but tell everybody where they can follow you and find out what's going on with what you're up to.
Sure. Yeah, my main show is Tech News Today. It's a daily news show on Twit. At 2:30 Pacific every day, live.twit.tv or twit.tv/TNT. And everything else I do is at tommerritt.com.
Very cool. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Adam.
So there you go. My interviews from Nerdtacular 2011. I hope you enjoyed those. Again, if you'd like to get more of that kind of stuff, more content, more MacCasts each and every week, and do something to help also support the show, support what I do, you can become a MacCast member, and you can get more information and details on that at member.maccast.com. And I want to say thank you to Veronica and Mike Schramm and Tom Merritt for doing those interviews. It was a lot of fun to sit down with those folks, and it was a lot of fun to be up in Utah at Scott's conference. And thanks to Scott for organizing that too. So check out nerdtacular.com. That's going to do it for today. Before we get out of here, I do want to thank all of my show sponsors. Gazelle, you can get cash for those used electronics. Do a simple search over at gazelle.com and get your upfront offer. Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook, you can check out their software, get free trials and more information over at circusponies.com. Smile, check out Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disk Label, bunch of great applications. I use all of them. You can get free trials and information details over at smilesoftware.com. And Furonics, makers of Deep Freeze, PowerSave Mac, check out their software. Get more information, details, and trials over at Furonics.com. Big thanks to all of my sponsors. Big thank you to you for supporting the show, for listening, staying subscribed. If you have any comments for me, question, something you'd like to let me know about, whatever it is, you can send your email to maccast@gmail.com, or you can call in on the listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9, and leave a voicemail. You can also leave voicemail on Skype. My Skype handle is the MacCast. You'll find me over there most days. And also, be sure to check out the MacCast.com website. There you'll find show notes with links to anything that I talked about in this or any other episode of the MacCast. While you're there, be sure to check out the MacCast forum. And a couple other places to find me online: Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or over on Facebook, facebook.com/TheMacCast. And that is it. So until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.